It's Thursday, December 3rd, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey, everyone's still in Central Texas, and it is cold. They're expecting snow. Got a great show lined up for you tonight, and you're listening to a very tired and almost wiped out geek, but got a lot of stuff to talk about. And no matter where you're listening and when you're listening, strap in, because here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Buttons, who's got the buttons?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the great state of Texas. I tell you, folks, I'm here via my portable podcasting studio, and yes, I've got a great show for you. Again, my name is Todd Cochran, and make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. That'll get you really right into the meat of all of the 533 episodic episodes I put out here since we've started podcasting in October of 2004. And pretty exciting stuff tonight. I'm just... really wrapping up my trip from being away from home from Hawaii. I'm out here in Texas right now, wrapping up, I guess, what I would describe as an exhausting week of meetings. It's just been nonstop, and plus a little bit of ongoing, I guess for a better word, not able to sleep. I think last night I crawled in bed at midnight, and then I looked at the clock about 2:15, and finally I said, come on, buddy, shut down and cool off. Well, basically, there's just been so much happening, and so much that's about to happen in the next week or so, that I've been pretty busy. So, you know, I'm really, at this point, I'm in the heavy planning stages of the 24-hour podcast, which goes down on December 12th. And, of course, I'm going to be online from the studio in Honolulu, raising money for Ronald McDonald House Charities. And, of course, bringing on a whole plethora of podcasting luminaries, techie, geeky folks, science folks, maybe even of some NASA may be coming in and actually providing some people to talk to over the Mercury mission, and maybe even another surprise as well. So lots of stuff really happening, and plus I put out the general word last night to really a host of podcasters saying, hey, if you're interested in being involved in the 24-hour podcast, let me know. What can you bring to the table? It should be a great event. As always, there's probably not enough slots for everyone that wants to participate, and it also is impacted by the fact that we're going to be doing the 2009 Fifth Annual People's Choice Podcast Awards at 8 p.m. Eastern on the 12th, during basically right in the middle of the 24-hour show. So got a lot on the agenda. We're going to be doing our Christmas special as well from Tech Podcast Network. So lots of things really that has to come together about 8 days from now, or maybe nine, I guess, if you count, actually count today, but really, it's just right around the corner, and as always, it's just a mad rush to be ready to go. Hey, I want to welcome any of you that are new listeners or viewers tonight to the show. I want to thank you for basically subscribing or listening online, however you may be listening or watching the podcast. I definitely appreciate it, and of course, I want to welcome you to our family of listeners. Being that I am originally and live in Hawaii, actually not originally, being that I live in Hawaii, and this is where the show is produced most of the time when I'm not traveling, you're part of our Ohana, and Ohana really is a very strong word in Hawaii, meaning family. So I want to welcome you to the family, and I hope that you, of course, get subscribed to the show via iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Subscribe to us via maybe the Stitcher application, via iTunes if you've got an iPhone. There's a lot of different applications out there if you've got a BlackBerry or an Android as well. The main thing is get the show automatically delivered to your media player of choice, and that way you can take Geek News Central wherever you may go. And watch or listen, and that's the beauty of the show. I want to welcome listeners from 160 countries worldwide and wherever you may be listening to the show. Thanks for being part of our family. And, of course, there's some countries that have a very small listenership. We hope that you will take charge and become the Geek News Central fan club of your local country, and spread the word about the show. And let's grow this worldwide audience to epidemic sizes. Of course, the audio portion of the show is followed by 99.99999% of you, and we do video as well. And, of course, I want to welcome all the folks that are on Ustream. Well, the forecast for the Dallas-Fort Worth area for tomorrow morning is snow. And I drove up from Austin, was it yesterday or the day before? It's all run together at this point. But the weather was just horrible. I was coming up I-35, and it was, you know, just nasty weather, and that is exhausting enough. But I've had a couple of meetings here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm actually going north of Dallas tomorrow for meetings, and then I'll be really putting my head to rest very near DFW so I can get out Saturday. But if snow actually is on the ground tomorrow morning, maybe I'm not going anywhere. Because when it snows here, they don't know how to handle it. They really, really don't. It doesn't happen very often. So we'll see what happens. I'm in another Homewood Suites. And, hey, so far, I'm batting 1,000 here on Homewood Suites. I'm pretty happy with it. So, hey, for those of you on Ustream tonight, I'm actually pushing the stream a little different. So I'm kind of curious on how the video quality is tonight. If you are up in chat, I'd like to, you know, basically let me know how the video quality is, because I'm using the native streamer on VidBlaster, and I have no idea at what frame rate the application is pushing the video at. So let me know if how the video is over there on Ustream. I would appreciate it, because I really don't have any way to judge. I can when I'm using the Flash application, because I can kind of monitor if there's any packet loss or not. But if you're listening on chat, I mean, or up on chat on Ustream, just drop me a line and we'll keep an eye on it. Still continue to have challenges with my new Sprint card. Going to be calling Sprint when I get back to Hawaii and see what other options there are. I may just go back to my other card in the meantime and not even maybe turn this new card back in. I'm really not happy with it, as we talked about in the last show. So tonight the show is being pushed and streamed on Ustream. So pushed on Verizon to Ustream. So hopefully that's working out well. All right, let me look down my little list here of topics that I wanted to cover in the very beginning of the show. I covered Podcast Awards Ceremony, 24-hour podcast. There are still some slots, and I'm still juggling the schedule. So if you want to be on and you're a podcaster, you need to really get on the website at geeknewscentral.com, scroll down in the website, find the posting I made about the event, and really take a look and then submit your information to us. I'll be sending info packets to a huge number of people within the next, hopefully, 24 hours, basically getting ready and prep for the show. Hey, as it is a new month, what I want to do is, of course, I want to give an extended thank you to the longtime sponsors of this show. Of course, GoDaddy.com has been with us from nearly the beginning. They've been a sponsor show since, I believe, May of 2005. So as we really head into approaching our actual fifth year of sponsorship with them, I want to thank you and continue to go out there and pick up their products and services and suggest to your neighbors, friends, family members, people that you know that you get substantial savings by using my promo codes that you can find via the geeknewscentral.com website. You know, when you get over there to GoDaddy and you're picking out a domain name, a dedicated server, a SSL certificate, you can get a great discount by using one of the probably half dozen codes there that are available for you. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd will save you 10% on orders. Of course, ComSale will get you .coms at $749. Are those .coms on renewals and new domain purchases? So thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here, and thank all of you for your continued support. They really allow me to do what I do. They help keep the lights on, keep my family fed, just as the folks at Citrix do. Citrix GoToMeeting, you know, you guys, I always tell you guys, you don't have to travel. You can do meetings from home. Well, I'm telling you, when you're traveling and you need to do a meeting when you're on the road, this is the application to use. You can start a meeting with a single click. I instant messaged a guy a URL today. He clicked on it. We were in a meeting, shared a document, went over it in less than like 5 minutes, had an approval on a new advertising campaign that we're getting ready to launch at Raw Voice. Got sign off on that by him and I, and basically forwarded up to the media buyer, and boom, we were done. And GoToMeeting is available to be used with a Mac. You got a chat function. You can do recording and playback. Automatically integrates into Microsoft Outlook. The cool drawing tools, like I've told you before, I like to use. And, of course, it includes full phone conferencing and a voice IP. You can get a free 30-day trial. That's a month of unlimited meetings for free. Again, unlimited online meetings for free by GoToMeeting by going to www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for a free 30-day trial. And thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at Geek News Central. They also helped us out over at the Podcast Awards website as well, so big thanks to them as well. All right, let me go ahead here, and I got a stack of stuff for you tonight. And I'm going to close a couple of things in the process. I've got some voicemails at the end of the show tonight that we can go over. I've got a couple of calls that have came in. I haven't reviewed those yet. I also have a number of emails as well that I will cover. If you have comments on today's show, you can always call the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. Geeknews@gmail.com is our email address where you can send comments about the show, anything about the show. You can send links about specific articles. Please indicate when you're sending me links to stuff that you're a listener, and maybe where you got your motivation to send a link to a specific article from. That really helps me here in really determining where the show goes in the future and how we bring topics of topicality to the podcast. And you guys are really as much an integral part of the program as I am. And what I wanted to do tonight was to look at I see a chat in the chat window. Actually, my mom has joined us on the live video stream. Everyone in the Ustream, say hello to Sherry. She is Sherry Cast in the chat room. So how does the video look like tonight, Mom, using this new streaming method? Why don't you let me know on in chat there, and I'll take a peek at it. Let's go ahead to the regular content tonight. The first article is available, or actually from joystick.com, joystiq.com. And, of course, those of you that are PlayStation fans, congratulations or happy birthday. PlayStation has celebrated its 15th anniversary. Really, can you think about that? That we've been 15 years with the Sony PlayStation. So this is pretty cool. Now, Sony opened a brand new site today celebrating the legacy of the PlayStation platform, and it features a timeline of Sony's major gaming hardware releases, beginning with the launch of the original Japanese PlayStation on December 3rd, 1994. And, of course, Sony Handhelds holds a majority of those dotted events with every version of the PSP. So, anyway, if you're looking to go back and get a little bit of an idea of where we've been with the Sony PlayStation and their handheld game consoles, hey, check it out. And I have the link up in the show notes, as always, at geeknewscentral.com. All right, you know, we talked about a couple of shows ago how scientists are really starting to push the envelope with contact lenses. And, you know, there may become a day here in the very near future where you will be able to contact lens in your eye and actually see a screen. Actually, I just covered the camera up. See a screen directly in front of you and be able to watch media, interact with stuff. You know, really, they're getting some pretty cool stuff where you're really going to be jacked in all the time, essentially through your contacts. But now, this is from Sky News. There's a new operation that are being performed right now. They're having their eyes fitted with an artificial lens that allows them to see in high definition. I guess surgeons began the process of implanting the lenses into the eye using the standard procedures for cataracts, and now they can fine-tune the focus of the lens several days later. It's not even done immediately. So the techniques gives patients a vision so sharp that it is even better than 20/20, and it's the best an adult can usually hope for. So while it's really not truly HD, really giving people eyesight better than 20/20 is very impressive. I know for a number of years I had vision better than 2010, so I don't know if that's actually where I would have actually better vision, but it's, of course, I'm at this age, sadly, I'm no longer in that position, and I use spectacles a lot for reading in front of the computer and so forth. But what do you think about that? That's pretty cool, right, that we've got new optical lenses that's being put in that give people, you know, really extraordinarily good eyesight. All right, those of you that are photography buffs, Canon has actually submitted a patent to introduce a touchscreen DSLR. Now, you know, one thing that drives me crazy about digital cameras is really it is kind of a pain to deal with the menu system that they have. Usually you've got some archaic little button and you try to use the little up down button, and you really, if you're working with a small camera, it's almost worthless. And they get all these great cropping features, you know, everything is in there that really can really do some fine editing to your photos with your cameras, but you have to use this, you know, almost joystick like type of control to drive through the menu systems. And for me, it's not worth it. It drives me crazy. But if Canon is going to come out with a touchscreen DSLR monitor on the back where you can actually move stuff around, scale it like you would an iPhone and so forth, this could be pretty cool. This is initially, it looks like, going to go on big body cameras, obviously, as if it's subjected to the DSLR bodies. But they've got plenty of graphic drawings here on the patent submission that they've made. So we'll see what happens. Next thing up, let's talk a little bit about an article I saw over on Engadget. When I travel with a lot of, those of you on Ustream, a lot of cables with USB connectors, primarily to charge my iPhone, to charge Bluetooth headsets, and I travel with two headsets because I always seem to run out of juice at the least opportune time, and whatever variety of other, you know, devices. And it's the same at home, where continuing, most of us are seeing a huge growth of devices that need to be charged via, you know, basically a USB connection connected to a device. Well, now, what is being sold, and this is available via Gotta Be Mobile or over at Slash Gear. This is the two sites that I found this on tonight. You can now have an in-wall USB charger. Yes, an in-wall USB charger. Now, I would only recommend this if you're building a new house, because we all need as many plugs as we can in our home. But if you have extra power jacks in your home, you can buy this device for $10 and essentially replace the power plug in an office or in a room, and instead of having a power plug, you now have two USB jacks. Now, I'm looking at this thing, I'm thinking, well, this would be a perfect plug to have on a kitchen, because that's where most of our cell phones get recharged at home. Why did they put like four or five plugs in this thing? It obviously can handle it, but anyway, you get a two-plug USB charger, USB jack, instead of your standard wall jack. So if you're willing to sacrifice, you can do that. So for as little as $10, you can order these up. and get them installed. Now, if I was going to build a house, I think I would have these things all over the place in addition to additional plugs. All right, those of you that are have Dell laptops, Dell has released some fixes to some issues that some of the Dell Latitude machines have been having. If you have a Latitude E6400 and an E6500 series machine, you definitely want to go over to Dell or run the actual application that Dell provides to check for laptop or for upgrades to your machine from the manufacturer. And they have got a series of updates that are going to improve some things. What is the main thing that they've been? Oh, they've had some temperature issues with those specific machines, and I guess it's been plaguing some users for months. So those upgrades are available, along with they've got some links here to some other upgrades for some other machines as well. So I have this linked up. This was via Engadget, at Engadget.com. Computers are getting smaller and smaller, and I think I talked about me building the new. Well, we're going to actually name it tonight. Actually, I haven't actually decided on a name. We're going to announce a number of names tonight that people have submitted, and then I'm going to ask everyone to vote on their favorites from what have been submitted. Then we will actually name what I'm terming my Skypeosaurus copycat from Leo Laporte. We're going to name those machines on the next show when I get back to Hawaii, but I'm going to share the names that have been submitted so far, and then you guys can vote on them via email. On the next show, we'll get to that a little later in the podcast. But, you know, computers are getting smaller and smaller. I told you I built these two machines that I'm using at home. They're really just, you know, box size. But a company called CompuLab has come out with a Windows 7 ready machine that really is about twice the size of a mouse. It's just a little itty bitty little box. It's got a number of outputs on it. It's, of course, it's running on an Intel Atom CPU. You can get the CPU from 1.1 gigahertz to 2 gigs with up to 2 gigs of DDR2 RAM. It's got a hard drive built in, and it's got built-in Wi-Fi. It's got some USB 2.0 ports and so forth. And it's just a small, itty-bitty little machine, and it'll be available in January. So if you need a really low-power desktop machine for your kids and space is a premium, this is going to be cool. These are really, really cool. And best part, it only uses 8 watts of power. So I have the link up to this to show. Amazing how small these machines have gotten. And really, this big, you know, not very big at all. Again, like I said, twice the size of a standard size mouse is how big this computer is. Windows 7 ready. Hey, Mac, can you guys do that? Oh, I guess you guys tried with the Mac Mini, but, you know, you guys are at this size. How small can you guys go, Mac? They probably can go small. All right, let's talk a little bit about an article that Susabel, one of the listeners of this show and also a contributing blogger at GNC Smith. And, of course, as a subnote, I've gotten an email from a couple of people that want to blog on GNC pro bono. I love anytime someone wants to write pro bono. So I'll be emailing you back here directly. Just you're in my stack of stuff to get back. But let's go back and talk a little bit here again about Susabel's article. She was... essentially, the title of the article is just put the flash recovery CD in the box, okay? And what happened was, is a couple of days ago, a friend of hers called with panic, and basically her fancy media-enabled Acer laptop had died. And when it booted, it kept booting into a recovery mode, but then could not recover. So she goes into this, you know, discussion of how she essentially had to search for an hour and a half online to find the really kind of some information and some tips to and tricks in order to kind of trick the system into going into a mode that she wanted to go into in order to recover it. And, you know, she said this could have all been really, I wouldn't have had my time wasted if the manufacturer had just put the installation / recovery CD in the box. Now, Acer on their website had buried it, in some sub-note or some sub-page that said that, yes, you can order a CD, and it will take a couple of weeks for delivery. Well, when you have a machine that is down, and maybe it's your only machine, especially if you're on a budget, and your machine's, you know, inaccessible for a couple of weeks, you know, that's really unacceptable. So why, you know, I've seen this with some machines I've bought recently. There's no disc with them at all. So what do you do? You know, sometimes they give you the option within the machines to build up a backup disc, and, you know, so you can have that available. And then where do you remember where you put it? Why don't, you know, what's the cost of a CD? A dime? 10 cents? 5 cents in bulk? Maybe 50 cents if they're actually putting in, as you know, they're printing it with the ink and they're burning it. You know, it doesn't cost that much. Include the insulation recovery CD in the box. I wish all manufacturers would do that. But this is the age of cost cutting, and they just don't do it. But I agree with Susie Bell. It was, you know, took her a short time to fix it once she figured out how to do what she needed to do to kind of bypass some functions that she couldn't get bypassed initially without, you know, additional information from the internet. So anyway, I'll have this linked up in the show notes. You can check out Susie Bell's challenges that she went through and her recommendations. And if you have a machine that doesn't have a backup disk, maybe you want to order one. Okay, if your manufacturer makes that available to you, consider ordering one. All right, here's an article that I had to laugh. It's over on Gizmodo. And safe gifts for weird relatives you have to buy gifts for but don't want to. you know, we all have those, you know, there's some gifts that we have to buy that maybe we don't want to necessarily have to buy. And you want to buy something that looks kind of cool. You don't want to look like a cheapskate, something where you went down to the, you know, the dollar store. But the folks over at Gizmodo have a list of 8 items. One of them they've actually put a big red stamp on that says don't buy. Actually, 2 of them they have, of some gifts that might be worthy of a purchase. It's not going to cost you a lot. But it would be a little gift guide for, you know, for some of those kind of those stocking stuffers for those relatives that you have to buy gifts for but really don't want to. So just hope they don't read Gizmodo, because then they're going to think that you didn't want to buy for them. So I have the link up in the show notes, of course, for you. Okay, over on CNET, Intel is rushing, sees a rush to Netbook App Store. It says right now, as Intel and PC makers prepare to launch an App Store for netbooks in 2010, the emphasis is on speed. This is a quote over here from Intel. It says, "We have a lot of developers right now jumping all over this and writing apps and getting them ready," Scott Applin, director of Intel's development network, told CNET on Wednesday. "Today you can actually submit applications, get them in validation, and be one of the first in the store when we have that available next year. We don't have specific dates. It's how fast we can get it up and ready." So in other words, there is going to be a app store for those of you that have netbooks. Again, the apps are to be optimized and be able to run fast on the netbooks that are largely running on the Intel Atom platform. And so this is pretty cool that they're going to be launching a specific app store for netbooks and give you guys a bigger variety of applications to load on there that doesn't load down the processor. And really, I think what's going to happen here is this is probably going to be big next year. If you think about the iPhone app store, a lot of you have picked up netbooks. Personally, I have not. You guys know my feelings. You know, basically, I just don't want to carry another, you know, a machine that will just only do net surfing. But many of you, this is all the applications you really need, or for a student, or for one of your kids, or if you just want to travel light, you're out there buying these netbooks. So kind of cool that they're getting ready to introduce the App Store for netbooks. So we'll see what happens with this next year, of course, by Intel. We'll keep you advised. Biggest news today, of course, is Comcast. It's official. Comcast is buying NBC Universal for, it looks like, $15 billion. This is approximately half in cash and half in an equity stake or equity share in its cable in its cable networks in exchange for half of the new NBC Universal. Part of the deal says if Comcast gets more than $15 billion back from the new NBC Universal in a reasonable time frame, this bet is going to pay off. And the folks over at Gizmodo have come up with a few reasons on why they're actually doing this buy. They feel that they have more leverage up against ESPN to kind of hold ESPN to the rates that they're currently paying for ESPN programming by maybe bringing in more NBC offerings and versus ESPN so that there's some competition within the channel space. And also that they're trying to hedge their bets as more people move away from broadcast TV and going into consuming content, that they're, you know, that they will have some control in where content gets distributed, like Hulu, and how it's distributed. They're really trying to, basically control the media from both ends. And this should raise a little bit of concern to all of us that if the company that delivers the media is controlling the content from the media, they can basically provide anything they want to us, and we don't have much choice. And this is, you know, so far as a la carte offerings, they can say no a la carte offerings. So we'll have to see how this is going to play out. I'm sure there's going to be some antitrust, and there's also some big names that have already come up and said that they're against the deal. This is requires some approval by the government before this happens, but pretty good article by the folks over there at Gizmodo on this. And also, let's just talk a little bit about some of the facts on this deal. NBC owns 27 local TV stations, and the NBC network reaches 99% of U.S. homes with TVs. Comcast 2008 revenues were $34.3 billion. NBC Universal was $16.9 billion. And as a disclaimer here, I'm going to be broadcasting from the NBC Universal booth both Saturday. Of course, actually, the Tech Podcast team at CES is going to be broadcasting from the NBC Universal booth on Saturday and Sunday at the Consumer Electronics Show. Looks like we're going to be going late in the afternoon. I think we've got our times firmed up. I think Saturdays is going to be 4 Eastern, 3 or 4 Eastern. Anyway, we'll get the times out to everyone, but we'll be doing live video streams and stuff directly from the NBC Universal booth, which will be cool. Kind of like the same type of stuff that Tech did here at CES, but we look forward to bringing that content to you. But anyway, going on here, total control. They have 1 out of every 5 viewers, viewing hours in the United States. Being Comcast has 22 cable channels, including E, Style, G4, Comcast Sports Network, and the Golf Channel. NBC has 30 cable channels, including NBC, Telemundo, MSNBC, Bravo, USA, CNBC, and of course is part of Hulu. So anyway, very interesting where they're going in their control. And what does this mean for Time Warner? Does that mean that Comcast now can dictate to Time Warner, okay, you got to pay X number of bucks for NBC content? Seems like really a lot of anti-competition going on there. Second big news of the day was Google is announcing a public DNS service. Now, many of you are probably very familiar with OpenDNS. OpenDNS provides DNS services to users that do not want to use essentially their internet service provider's DNS. Gives you an alternative to, and what OpenDNS's goal has been is to keep you away from malware sites, to give you a better routing of your web traffic as you're basically pulling data down from the internet. But Google's initiative today is all about speed. They say that this public DNS offering is about speeds, not ads. They are not going to be cross-queuing information. In other words, they're not going to be using the DNS data that they're collecting from you as you're going to a variety of websites to use it to target ads. They say that is going to be completely disconnected. There's only going to be a 24-hour period of data storage. In other words, they're only going to keep 24 hours of where people are going with their browsers on file as far as, you know, basically the IP retainment. And we'll see how long the government allows them to do that. But Google says beyond the speed increase, now Google is basically trying to optimize our utilization of the web, and they feel they're in a good position to do that, which makes sense. But Google says it's going to step in to combat spoofing and denial of service attacks. And they're also going to kind of do some stuff in trying to prevent you from getting onto malware sites or be able to provide some warning. So this is really a big, this is big brother here, Google. This is going to make it very hard for the OpenDNS folks. The OpenDNS folks right now make a significant amount of money. For those of you that use this service that actually type in the wrong address, you go to, say you're going to go to geeknewscentral.com and you miss a letter and they redirect you to some site that has ads on it. Google say they're not going to be doing this, which we'll see. But every course is concerned about the privacy issue. And again, Google said that they're only going to keep that data for 24 hours. And they're not going to again connect users with the Google account or the company's advertising products. But just think about that data. If they're able to take that data internally and process that, and enough people, you look at OpenDNS, I think they're providing like 20 million domain reader, you know, basically domain addressing each day, telling your machine where to go to get the data from Geek News Central or Google or Firefox or wherever you may be searching or surfing the web to. Imagine they taking that data as an aggregate. They can really build some very interesting information from that statistics data because not everyone's running Google Analytics. We'll see. We'll see here. It's going to give them some insight that no one else has. Brilliant move. Will you use it? Will you be willing to use the Google DNS? How many of you don't even understand what I'm talking about? I guess that's the question. If you don't understand this completely, go over to OpenDNS or check out the Google DNS service. It's really self-explanatory. It gives you an idea on how it works. And thus far, the users of it are saying that the web speeds are actually faster using Google DNS. So maybe it's living up to its words. Also, it's very early on in its utilization. Okay, let's talk about Friend Connect. Well, many of you have seen Friend Connect. Matter of fact, I use Friend Connect tonight on Ustream. By basically, they've got a option here where you can tie in your Twitter and your Facebook, your AIM count to basically I typed tonight live Geek News Central podcast starting in mere moments. Join me now, and I clicked that, and that sent it instantly to Twitter. It sent it instantly to Facebook. I didn't have to go to each website to do it. They provided a link back to the Ustream page instead of sending them, of course, back to Geek News Central, which I wish they could. But Facebook, Facebook Friend Connect has worked real well. Facebook Connect, excuse me. But now Google and Twitter have teamed up to launch what they're calling Friend Connect. I apologize. Facebook Connect and Google and Twitter are announcing a partnership with Friend Connect. And what that allows you to do is use your Twitter account to log into multiple websites that support Friend Connect. And you don't have to log with any other type of log in. You don't have to sign up. You just go to that website, and if they support Friend Connect, you can log in. Now, the analysis of this so far is that where the folks at Facebook have made Facebook Connect very, very simple to use, and for me tonight, all it was just putting in my username and password and saying authorize, using Google and Twitter Friend Connect is much more difficult and convoluted, and even some techies are a little bit scratching their head on their implementation. So while Facebook may not have nothing to worry about, the folks over at Google, I'm sure, will be working to improve this process and make it easier. And again, it's all about consolidation, and they're trying to consolidate you to not having a lot of user account names and being able to, you know, do a lot of stuff through these this sharing of login technology, I guess, for a better word. So we'll see what happens and how they deploy this and if it gets better. But I actually had missed the Twitter announcement yesterday. Yesterday, I wasn't online hardly at all. I was stuck in a building that had zero. I mean, my cell bar was no service. And what was funny was, is I had was in a room with people that had Blackberries, had T-Mobile. Everyone had service except for me. So Verizon signal came through the room fine. T-Mobile did, but AT&T was dead. Love the phone, hate the service. I missed the announcement yesterday on this. So I'll try to dig that up, maybe put it up in the show notes for you. Let's talk a little bit about an article I found over at newtv.com. FCC to broadcasters. And this is big. This is a query that the FCC is making, that where the FCC is asking television broadcasters, are you using or are you going to use all of the spectrum that has been allotted to you? Now, when we went from analog to digital TV, the TV broadcasters were consolidated into a much tighter frequency range. Today, TV broadcasters that actually put out a signal over the air that you can pick up with an antenna are each allocated about 6 megahertz of spectrum. And really, when you think about that, that's pretty big. That's a pretty wide little slot, 6 megahertz in specific. You know, each market, it's divvied out. You know, there's multiple. You know, a station in Los Angeles will have the same 6 megahertz as maybe a station in Phoenix, and this, you know, same station in Dallas, and same station in Memphis, and you know, so on and so forth. So there's multiple stations separated by geographic areas that are utilizing these frequencies, but they're asking. The FCC is asking the broadcasters a series of questions. And here they are. What factors should the commission consider when examining and comparing the benefits of spectrum used for over-the-air television broadcasting and those of spectrum used for wireless broadband services? Number two, what would be the impact to the U.S. economy if insufficient additional spectrum, in other words, wireless spectrum for wireless devices, were made available for wireless broadband deployment in terms of investment, jobs, consumer welfare, innovation, and other indicators of global leadership? Number three, what would be the impact to the U.S. economy and public welfare if the coverage of free over-the-air broadcast television was diminished, was diminished to accommodate a repackaging of stations to recover spectrum? Number four, how do television broadcasters use the capabilities of digital television today? Please provide information on data rate allocations to high def and standard def and multicast streams, bandwidth leasing agreements, etc., and the business rationale behind these choices. So they're compelling television broadcasters saying, how are you using your 6 megahertz? Are you subleasing some of your spectrum to a third-party provider to provide bandwidth leasing? How much HD are you providing? How much SD are you? They're calling these folks to the carpet, folks. Now, depending on the type of transmission, some stations may use as little as a meg, 1 megahertz of the 6 megahertz they have been allotted. Now, if they're sending a lot of HD, they could be using as much as 5 megahertz for an HD broadcasting using MPEG-2. Now, that number could go up if there was an introduction of 3D TV, but at the same time, if a station is only using 3 or 4 or 5 megahertz, there lays some spectrum that may be available for recapitalization into the wireless space. Will we see a day? How many of you think we will see a day when broadcast television as it exists today no longer exists? In other words, if you live in the country and you currently use an antenna to basically receive broadcast, over-the-air broadcast, how would you feel if that completely was eliminated and given over to wireless and broadband? Now, what would happen is those over-the-air broadcast companies would be forced to go online. Now, there would be one heck of a war of businesses. Legislatures would get involved. I mean, this would be the scrap of the century, because essentially the FCC, and it's probably going to turn into the scrap of the century, because the FCC realizes that they're out of spectrum and they need to get some more back. They have to. They have no other choice, because if they don't get it from the military, if they don't get it from other industry, what's going to happen is that innovation is going to be stifled. We're not going to be able to expand this digital revolution or evolution. And there's a very big, healthy segment of broadcast spectrum that isn't being used to its best benefit at this point. Now, those of you that have cable TV, you probably could care less, because you're getting all your TV from a cable. People in the country would probably say, whoa, 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 hold up. But how many in the country don't maybe use a satellite provider? I could see a day where rural customers may end up getting some sort of a subsidy from the government to pay for either satellite or wired television, where the government says, okay, we're going to take those broadcasting stations away and make that spectrum available for other stuff and force you to get your TV a different way, get it digitally. I think most people that live in rural America today probably already on Dish or one of the other stations, because how many people are really just watching one, two, or three, four stations in your local, in your local community? I'm sure some are based on the economy today. I'd love to hear, is it how many in this audience only use over the have or get over the air TV? Geeknews@gmail.com. Love to hear from you on this. And also, what do you guys think is going to happen here? Do you think the FCC is going to, you know, basically start a digital war with the broadcasters and going to, at some point force them to give up some of that spectrum? I think it'll just be a huge battle. I personally don't think they could accomplish it. I really, really don't. Okay, I spent a long time on that. Let me go ahead and move on. All right, we need an open source Twitter shell. How many of you agree with that? Dave Weiner's purporting it. He says that he thinks we should be able to, as a community, come up with a application that would duplicate everything that Twitter does, but make it so that we can run it on our independent websites. Now, I thought there was already somebody doing that out there, but he says we need an open source Twitter shell. He said it would do more or less exactly what the Twitter.com website does. Same preferences, same commands, same user experience. He goes on to say, think Apache for Twitter user interface. Now, what Apache is Apache is the application that probably runs about 99% of websites that you go to. And he thinks there's a need for a decentralized Twitter. What do you guys think? Would you like to have a Twitter, your own Twitter on your own site? All right, on the last show, I misspoke. I had said that there was going to be a Chrome OS for Mac. After I got through with the show notes, I got to thinking about that. I went back and reread the article. No, there's going to be a Chrome browser for Mac, and the beta launch is imminent. So you're going to see this very, very soon. You're going to be able to install Chrome on Mac OS 10, and they feel this is just like, it's an imminent release, so we'll see what happens there. But I apologize for the misinformation on the last podcast. Remember, we talked a little bit about the black screen of death that was being reported? Well, it was being reported that some updates to Windows 7 was causing some users not to get a blue screen of death, but a black screen of death. All sorts of media people jumped on the bandwagon on this story, and it turned out to be not true. It originated from an obscure blog post made by a computer security company called Prevex. And they accused Microsoft of patches that causes catastrophic crashes in Windows PC. And people picked up on this, and ultimately the company did a retraction, apologized to Microsoft, and not a lot is being said, but it just goes to show that people are aggregating data and doing very little cross-referencing when it comes. And this is, mainstream tech publications reporting incorrectly, and basically went on a single blog post from an obscure company to make the comments. A little bit dehydrated tonight. The cold weather has really caused me to, I haven't been drinking enough water, so I've been drinking more during the show tonight than normal. All right, over on Google's Webmaster Central blog, they've got a new application that allows you to check and see how fast your site is. They've just launched Site Performance, an experimental feature in Webmaster Tools that shows you information about the speed of your site and suggestions for making it faster. Now, a few weeks ago, Google has said that they are going to, in the near future, start linking PageRank to web page load speed, and that if your page loads slow, you may get a lower page rank for it, because they say it's basically a lower it causes users to have not a good web experience. So they say if you don't provide a good web experience for your people that come to your website, we're going to knock your PR rank down. So don't know what that's going to ultimately do, but I think this is a tool that is basically giving everyone a chance to check out their sites before they start blasting away. Okay, Apple tablet rumored to be shockingly inexpensive. You guys know Alex over at Dignation. Apparently, on episode 231 of the Internet-based show and co-host and web entrepreneur Kevin Rose asked Hodgman, who plays a bumbling PC in Apple's commercials, if he has any inside information on the tablet. He replied that he didn't know anything about it, and he went on to say, "You think they'd tell me?" Then Rose turned his attention to Alex and insinuated the co-host had privately revealed supposed information on the Apple's long-rumored touchscreen device. After pestering from Rose, Alex eventually conceded. He says, "I was shocked at how cheap the price point is going to be." He then declined to reveal anything further. Now, Hodgman did not have any insight on the tablet, and so we'll see what happens with this. But I don't know if Alex actually has revealed something he wasn't supposed to from Apple. But every indication is from many, many quarters that Apple's long-rumored touchscreen device may actually be, in fact, something that's going to be coming to marketplace next year. A little space news here. Mars Odyssey goes into safe mode. The NASA Mars Odyssey has gone into safe mode because of a computer glitch, and it's complicating separate efforts to free, of course, the rover struck on the Martian surface. Mars Odyssey went in safe mode on Saturday because of a memory error similar to an event that put the spacecraft in safe mode in June 2008. Engineers have commanded the spacecraft to perform a reboot on its onboard computer as part of the process to restoring normal operations, and they think they'll be up and running next week. Over on Space Today, International Space Station crew lands in Kazakhstan. A Soyuz aircraft carrying Canadian, European, and Russian ISS crew members safely landed in Kazakhstan on Tuesday. So they're back, and looks like the crew's fine. And currently, there's only two people on the International Space Station, and they're going to be joined by some more crew members in late December by three new crew members launching on a Soyuz. So the ISS back down to two people for a short term here. More space news. Scientists are pretty excited about what they found from a quasar. They have found that a quasar may be fueling a star creation in nearby galaxies. Scientists have long thought that when quasars would suck the life essentially out of planets and material within its own galaxy to feed others. But what they're actually seeing in this instance, that there is no stars or planets in or around the quasar, and it's actually feeding a nearby galaxy that's creating as many as, there was a remarkable number here. It was like 200 stars, 340 new suns per year in this specific galaxy. And that's just a huge number. And what's happening is this new galaxy and this quasar are slowly coming together, and scientists feel that probably many millennium from now, that galaxy will join, or actually that quasar will join that galaxy at its outer edges. But scientists now are theorizing that or they're trying to figure out where the quasar is getting all of this matter that it's feeding to this nearby galaxy. So pretty cool stuff, way above my head. But for those of your science buffs out there, you can check it out. Have you got an email recently? H1N1 malware epidemic is more contagious than the real deal. Apparently, if you've gotten an email recently, personing a message from the CDC, basically saying, if you'd like to find a place to go get a free free shot, they give you a link to a fake state vaccination program. And what it really does is it takes you to a site that is laden with malware, and then it's infests your computers by basically tricking you into sign up for a H1N1 shot. I apologize. All of a sudden here, I've had like an ongoing case of dry mouth. I don't know what. Okay, over on Ars Technica, Microsoft wants your Windows 7 tips and tricks feedback. Microsoft is asking Windows 7 users to submit their favorite tips and tricks so they can possibly be featured in the TechNet magazine. So if you have some cool tips or tricks, Microsoft's making it available for you to be able to submit those to the company, and you may be featured in an upcoming TechNet magazine article. So if you found something cool, we'd love to hear from you too. You can always send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com or the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. AT&T and Verizon have kissed and made up. That didn't take too long. Apparently, they both have dropped their lawsuit and decided to be friends again and get on with business. You know, why did they even go through this process in the first place? Was it just a publicity stunt? I really don't get it. Over on the BBC, fake website shut down by police. More than 1,200 websites that claim to sell cut-price designer goods have been shut down in the biggest police operation of the kind in the United Kingdom. 1,219 sites which advertise brands such as UGG Boots, Tiffany Jewelry, and Links of London were removed by Metropolitan Police. And the police are saying that customers who purchase items from these sites receive nothing but counterfeit goods or even stolen property. So if you've shopped any of those sites, they are no longer available. If you're a Comcast customer, they have finally rolled out their data usage meter, so you can find out how much data you're actually using on the Comcast network. Link of that will be up in the show notes. Okay, what I'm going to do is move right into, I've got a few more articles, but I'm going to go ahead and leave those for the end of the show. Actually, it'll be in the show notes. It'll be linked up to you. I'm going to go ahead and play the first voicemail here and then get into the email comments. So let me go ahead and play this first voicemail.
Hey, Todd, this is Andrew Darlow. Hope the great state of Texas is treating you well, if you're still there. I heard your request for retailers who are selling Canon lenses at good prices, and I have a lot to say on this topic. I'll try to be quick. First, you didn't say what focal length lens you're interested in. I assume you want a zoom, and you can tell me more maybe after this call. Canon brand high-end lenses, they're called L lenses, and they're great lenses in almost all cases, but they can be really heavy, so just keep that in mind. I have a 28-135mm IS Canon lens, which is not an L lens, but it's a fantastic lens. It's very lightweight, and it may be perfect for your needs. Most people choose the L lenses because they can shoot at very wide apertures, like f2.8, at like 100 or 200 millimeters. And just a little bit on that note, you really can't go wrong with just a standard 50 millimeter, like an f2.8 lens. It's really small, really compact. You can get a good quality Canon one for about $100, and it's great for portraits on your camera because your camera doesn't have a full frame 35 millimeter sensor. It has a smaller one. Regarding retailers, I'd only buy from a retailer who's going to allow you to return the lens without a restocking fee and who's reputable. One I can recommend is B&H Photo, who I know you know. I'd also recommend checking the used section at the B&H and Adorama, which is they're both in New York City, and also check out KEH Camera, which is kehcamera.com. They're very reputable, and they're based in Georgia. Many people don't even use the lenses that they sell to these places. So you can save almost 50% sometimes, and it's a mint lens often in the box. So feel free to tell me more about the type of lens you have. And I also have a new book that covers lenses and tips for photographing pets and people. And there's some free excerpts on the companion site at photopettips.com. All the best, happy holidays, and aloha.
Hey, Andrew, thanks for that. I appreciate it. I tell you, one thing I'm trying to do here is my wife is really just basically looking for a telephoto lens. And so, you know, we've got a good standard lens that we use for taking family photographs and so forth. But she just wants, you know, again, a good telephoto lens. I think you've gave me some good tips there, and I appreciate the call. For those of you that have been following the show tonight, you may have noticed that obviously things are not going good behind the mic here. And what I figured, I think I just realized what's going on. I think the room is like 80. Definitely too hot in here, and it's definitely affected me tonight. So I apologize for the coughing on you tonight and the frequent interruptions here near the end of the show. And those of you that are on the video just got to see me do a little boo-boo, because what I had done is I had muted myself here for a few minutes while Andrew was going through his dissertation on lenses, and basically coughing in the background, which those of you on Ustream got to see, but those of you that were on the audio portion of the show missed. So thanks for being patient with me there. In addition, we've got a post-show edit here, folks, because I started to play our second voicemail tonight, and all was well until we got into one of the callers making a few explicatives, and we don't allow that in the show. So everyone, just keep in mind, when you call the voicemail hotline, please understand I'm playing to a G-rated audience, and we'd appreciate it if everyone tried to keep their comments G-rated, because I really, really can't have adult comments going into the show at any circumstances. So let's go ahead and get right into the email comments next, and then we'll close the show out. And I got an email from Eric, and let's talk about some of the names people have came up for the Skyposaurus, basically the new name for the Skyposaurus. We're going to choose a different name for it. Eric has picked Geekatron, Geekatron 2, Geekaraptor, Double Geekaraptor, Totinator. So again, the ones that Eric submitted were Geekatron, Geekatron 2, Geekaraptor, Double Geekaraptor, and Totinator. So that's pretty cool. I like that list. Jeffrey, one of our longtime listeners of the show, he has submitted Magic Monitor, Double Decker, Video Pylon, Video Master Pylon, Cin Magic 2010, Mr. Cinematic, Power Tower, HDMI Pylon, Mr. Big Cinematic, Skype Power Tower, Video Center, AV Giant, Daddy Duo, the optional Mr. Digital, Video Rocker, Video Giant 2010, Mr. Interface, Big Giant, Turn On Double Decker, so Diamond Duo, Video Friend. So anyway, Jeffrey, thanks for those submissions. And just remember, you know, this the Skyposaurus is strictly for being able to patch people in to the 24-hour podcast or any live events I do in Hawaii, where I can bring Skype callers into the video stream and also patch them easily into that. So, Jeffrey, thanks for your submissions. I got an email from Roger. Roger submission, hey, Todd, thanks for the podcast. I've been listening for a couple of years now, and you always find a way to make me smile. Listening to you at lunchtime today, you asked for a new name for the Skype rig you've got going there. How about Skypinator or Skyperator? Skype, like operator, but Skyperator. The first is, of course, similar to the Terminator, and the second is similar to operator. Best wishes from Central California, Roger in Fresno. So Skypinator, Skyperator. That's pretty good. I like those two. Greg, just apologize. I missed you in Austin. And next time I get down there, I'll email you before I come down. But we'll definitely have to get hooked up, and I'll have maybe do an event next time I'm down in the area. Got an email from Trucker Tom. It says, a man-controlled robotic hand with thoughts. And an Italian who has lost his left forearm in a car crash was successfully linked to a robotic hand allowing to feel sensations in the artificial limb and control it with his thoughts, scientists said Wednesday. During a one-month experiment conducted last year, 26-year-old, oh boy, Pierpaolo, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's name, Pierpaolo, boy, oh boy, lost his arm, felt like his lost arm had grown back again, although he was only controlling a hand that was not even attached to his body. So that was pretty cool. I'll have that link up in the show notes. Thanks for that, Trucker Tom. I definitely appreciate it. Got an email from one of the listeners talking, actually from Steve, talking about Windows 7 upgrades. He says, Todd, the short answer is yes. You can do an in-place upgrade from Vista to Windows 7. It must be 32-bit Vista to 32-bit Windows or Windows 7 or 64 Vista to 64-bit Windows 7. Also, the Vista version must be lesser than or equal to the upgrade version. For example, Vista Home Premium upgraded to 7 upgraded to Windows 7 Home Premium or Vista Home Premium upgraded to Windows 7 Pro or Ultimate will work with no problem. It should also be pointed out that all upgrades from XP can only done as a migration or clean install following the directions on the Win Super site. Migration is a multi-step process that involves backing up all personal data from the XP machine, installing Windows 7, and then restoring the personal data. Before you do an in-place Windows 7 upgrade, you should run the Windows 7 Upgrade Advisor, of course. And one more note, in place of upgrades also require a lot of time to install, 2 to 5 hours, depending on your machine and installed programs. So plan on having a large chunk of time to deal with install and working out any kinks afterwards. Steve goes on to say, I only like to do clean installs, which was the reason for me including that link in the previous email. I'm sorry I didn't better explain the details. The clean install of Windows 7 64-bit Ultimate on my 3GHz Intel Core 2 Duo with 6GB of RAM only took me 14 minutes from booting with the Windows 7 desk to getting the Windows desktop. That's fast. Timothy has sent me an email saying, I guess this could be considered tech news that considers the use of cell phones, two stories of the dangers of distracted driving and the ensuing punishment. Which sentence do you think is most appropriate? So he's got two stories here for me that have linked up. And was that all on email tonight? I think so. I think that was all I had on email. So what did you guys think of the Skype names? What do you guys want me to use? I'm kind of like Toddinator. Or Geekoraptor or Geekatron. That kind of sounds pretty cool. Geekatron. I like Eric's. There's a few that Jeffrey has submitted that I like. I like the one that Rogers, the Skyperator. I like that. That's pretty cool. What do you guys think? What do you guys see? You guys email me, geeknews@gmail.com. Tell me which names you liked. And magically, the room is cooled off, and I'm feeling better. I'm serious there. There was about at the 55-minute mark of the show, I began to wonder if I was going to have to shut down for a few minutes, and felt like, wow, it was... It did not feel good there for a few minutes, but the room has cooled off in temperature, and all of a sudden I'm feeling better. And I didn't change the heat level, so I don't know what's going on. All right, folks, next show, back in Hawaii and back in the studio. So I look forward to bringing the show back to you from Honolulu. And we'll be on live, of course, Monday night, probably around 8 p.m. Honolulu Standard Time. It'll be about 10 p.m. Pacific, or probably even later, obviously later for those of you on the East Coast. Of course, looking forward to getting home. My lovely wife has got me a honey-do list already. She's already got plans for me to knock a bunch of stuff out on Sunday, and so that's just going to add existing pressure to get ready for the 24-hour podcast. Again, if you have comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline +1-619-342-7365, and hey, thanks for hanging out with me while I struggled through tonight, because, yeah, the last half of the show was definitely a challenge. So, and those of you on Ustream, I'm sure you're sitting back going, what in the world was going on there? So I guess that's it, and thanks for hanging out. And for those of you on Ustream, we'll hang out with you for a little bit here after the show. But until next time, everyone take care, and aloha.